Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of the Twisted Sisters True Crime Podcast. I'm your host, Erin.
And I'm your co-host, Rocio.
So last week, Rocio told us the story of Lacey Ellen Fletcher, which is a wild case if you haven't heard it yet. So this week, it's my turn to tell a story, and I thought I would bring you guys a story that's much different than most of the cases that we've had so far. This week, I'm actually covering a cold case.
Ooh.
Rocio, do you know what a cold case is?
It's a case that hasn't been solved.
Yes. And I find cold cases kind of interesting. Like, I wish that I had the resources and could uncover the story myself. I think it would be like an interesting job, but also really frustrating when you like get these new leads and they don't follow through. But at the same time, how cool would it be to crack a cold case that's been cold for like 30 years?
Yeah. I was like, are you describing you want to be a detective?
Yeah, that'd be so cool. When I grow up, girl.
And when you grow up.
Yeah. I wish. But a lot of people that do like cold cases have been in it for like a long time. I don't think people just get thrown into cold cases.
Mm-hmm. True.
Like they like seasoned detectives.
Unless people sometimes cool, like, hire private investigators.
Yeah, that is true. I just think it'd be cool because they're like putting together the pieces of like a mystery. And, like, I feel like, I don't know if this is how it works, but I feel like they should alternate cold cases, like, every couple months, just so you can have, like, fresh eyes on the case.
That is true.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it would be cool. But anyways, we are covering a cold case today, and our story starts out in Clinton, Missouri. So, Clinton is a quiet farming town in the heart of America, and it's normally the peaceful region. They feel, you know, insulated from big city crime. It's like your typical small town, kind of like where we grew up.
Yeah.
Because I feel like our town was super small and isolated, and we kind of felt like nothing could go wrong there. I don't know. Did you feel like that?
I kind of did, honestly. It's just like a small town. Everybody knows everybody, and you just don't think that your neighbor is going to do something crazy.
Exactly. Like, growing up, the only time we would really lock our house.
But then later on, some stuff did start happening.
Yeah, exactly. Like, when I was growing up, I felt like we didn't lock our doors unless we were literally, like, going on vacation. And then as I got older, I was like, no, we need to be locking the door every night. Are you guys freaking crazy?
Yeah. Like, we always locked our doors, but we kind of lived in a different area than you. You kind of had a whole house and area.
Yeah.
And mine was, like, in apartments. So there's, yes, like, so many people.
Yeah, no. Those apartments, I would have locked my doors too.
Yeah. So the apartments I grew up in, it's called, or it's nicknamed Sin City. So
yeah, exactly. No, thank you. A little different, but I mean, it's funny because we literally only lived like
a couple minutes,
max 10 minutes apart from each other.
Yeah, that is so crazy.
Yeah, like, and to think that just that amount of time can change an entire neighborhood.
Mm, just like crossing a bridge. You're, like, in a completely different neighborhood.
Yeah, literally.
Mm-hmm.
I even saw today on Facebook, like, we both don't live in the town that we grew up in anymore. But I saw that people are getting their cars broken into at restaurants.
What?
Yeah, like, somebody had their car broken into at the Chinese buffet, La Fuente, and somewhere else, all within, like, the last, like, 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
crazy. I'm saying, like, there's more crime starting to happen in our town.
Oh, yeah.
Like, growing up, we never thought so, but, like, now,
no,
we're, like, seeing a whole lot more stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. All right, enough of our small little town. You guys understand. So, Clinton, Missouri was a small town, and, you know, most people didn't think that anything would ever really go wrong. But that sense of security was shattered after a popular young woman was abducted and possibly murdered. And that brings us to our leading lady, Angela Hammond. She was an outgoing 20-year-old woman that everyone called Angie. She worked at a bank and took classes at Central Missouri State University. In January 1991, she got engaged to her boyfriend, Rob Schaefer. Rob was a star athlete who planned to be in the military. When Rob proposed to Angie, he promised he would always take care of her. I thought that was cute.
That's what I was thinking. I was like, oh.
Yeah, and it was like in the information, too. It was like, aw.
Mm.
Okay, so that's all that I could really find about Angie prior to the case. She was a Caucasian female with brown hair, brown eyes, and she had a scar on her upper lip, and she also wore contacts. So the mystery of this cold case began on April 4th, 1991. At around 10 p.m. that night, Angie dropped off her fiancé Rob at his house from a barbecue. They had planned on meeting later after Rob's mother got home from work because he was babysitting his little brother at the time. So Angie spent some time with her friend Kayla while waiting for Rob to finish babysitting. At around 11:15 p.m., she called Rob from a payphone at the intersection of Jefferson and 2nd Street, just 7 blocks from his house. While talking to him, she noticed a suspicious man circle the block several times in a green Ford pickup truck. It then pulled up beside her. The man went out and used the payphone beside of her before getting back into his truck. He then got back out again and started using a flashlight and flashed it around his truck like he was looking for something. So meanwhile, all this is going on, Angie is on the phone with her fiance Rob. So she just starts describing the man's appearance and the truck to Rob. She then asked if the man needed to use the phone, and he replied he would try the other one again in a minute. So I guess he kind of played it off like, oh, that phone's not working, I'm just waiting for you to get off the phone. So she and Rob continued to their conversation, and just a few moments later, Rob heard Angie scream. Chillingly, the man said, I didn't need to use the phone anyways. Could you imagine?
That's scary. I would be freaking out.
Yeah, just think that, like, if you were on the phone with somebody, let's say, like, even just like your sister, and you hear that.
Oh my God.
I'd freak out.
Yeah. I would be like, find my iPhone, looking her up. Where is she at?
Exactly. And to think, crazy enough, like, this is 1991. They didn't have Find My iPhone. You know, she was calling from a payphone.
Yeah. You're like, oh my God, where are you?
Yeah. At least he kind of knew that she was like 7 blocks away. Like, this was the payphone that she had used previously, because he immediately dropped his phone and he ran outside to his car and he drove to that exact payphone hoping to find her, because I mean they're only 7 blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
So as the abductor's truck sped past him in the opposite direction, he heard her yell out to him.
Aww.
So she's in this truck and they're driving, you know, opposite directions, and he hears her scream out for him, Rob.
Yeah, that's scary.
Is that not wild? Like, you're watching your fiance be abducted right now. No. So Rob, since they were going in the opposite directions, he threw his car in reverse, unknowingly damaging the transmission on his car. So he followed the truck for about 2 miles before the transmission failed as he made a sharp right turn. Rob said, and I quote, "It started dying as I was making my right turn. This guy turned off to the right. All I saw was his brake lights and dust." And that was the last time he ever saw that truck or Angie again.
Exactly. I'm like, if that wouldn't have happened,
fucked
up his car, or if his car would have just kept working, he could have gotten her back. Yeah, I feel like he would have gotten her back.
If he could have kept following them until he would have stopped at nothing. So Marsha Cook, Angie's mom, said that Rob blamed himself for it because he had always told her that he'd be there to take care of her. And he tried. He did everything that he could, that could be done. Nobody blames him, but I think that he thinks that people blame him.
Yeah.
Which would be a hard thing. I mean, I would feel like people would probably blame me too if I didn't, you know, if I was that close and nothing happened.
Like, I get it, but I don't blame him.
Yeah, I don't blame him either. There's, like, who would have known that was going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And, like, you got to think, he's probably, his mind is racing. So much adrenaline is happening and you're freaking out.
Yeah.
He didn't mean to do that to his car. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So an extensive search began for Angie, the abductor, and his truck. According to Detective Damon Parsons of the Clinton Police Department, we had some assistance from Missouri State Highway Patrol that did a computer search on all registered vehicles. Through their help, we had 1,600 possibilities that we had to check as far as color and whether they had any mural in the back window, which is another thing. The back window of this green Ford pickup truck, it had like a mural of like a fish jumping out of water.
Wow. That's very noticeable.
Yeah, we'll see pictures below. But the craziest thing is, none of these cars came back as a match. So they came up with nothing. After 1,600 possibilities, nothing.
What?
It's just like the car just disappeared.
Yeah, I'm confused.
Makes no sense. With very few leads in this case, investigators started to question Rob and his story. So again, Angie's mother, Marsha, said that she never suspected him. She said, I think that it was natural that people wondered, did the boyfriend do it? But my feeling was, I've known that kid all his life, and I never doubted a minute that he had anything to do with it.
I guess I can kind of see people coming from that way.
Which is, yeah. I think, a good thing yeah. that she has said that and stood by him this whole time. Because, I mean, it probably would be a story that people would be like, oh, the fiance is making this crap up.
Yeah.
But you see, like, it could be turned. You see it happen all the time that the fiance or the husband turns on the woman and... You know, with this truck just vanishing out of nowhere and it not being found, I mean, what do you do now?
You have no leads.
I guess you question, yeah, you question the fiance and see if he breaks or if his story sticks true and then go from there.
Mm-hmm.
So at first, there were no witnesses to corroborate his account. A polygraph examination was done on him and it indicated that he was telling the truth. Finally, two witnesses came forward, said they saw the truck and a suspicious person around the payphones between 11:30 and 11:45, shortly before Angie's disappearance. With all this information, Rob was cleared within a week.
Good. But like, dang, what took y'all too long?
Yes. So 2 days later after this happened.
Wait, just 2 days later?
The what?
Just 2 days later, the witnesses came forward?
Yeah. Like, why did it take you guys so long?
That's what I was saying too. But then I was like, 2 days, maybe they like went to sleep.
Like, they, oh, I don't want to be a part of this.
I'll go tomorrow. I don't know. Though.
Like, well, what's going on?
Okay.
Okay. So 2 days after the abduction, there was a connection to two other unsolved cases within a 100-mile radius. The first one occurred in Max Creek, Missouri. On January 19th, 1991, 42-year-old convenience store worker Trudy Darby called her son to report a suspicious man lurking outside. Less than 10 minutes later, her son arrived at the store and found it empty. 2 days later, her body was found on a riverbank 10 miles from the store. She had been raped and shot in the head twice.
Dang.
Yeah. So they think that that one's in connection along with this case, which involved a 30-year-old Cheryl Kenny, another convenience store worker in Nevada, Missouri, which is 70 miles from Max Creek. She vanished after locking up her store on the night of February 27th. Her car was found abandoned in the store parking lot. It is believed that she was also kidnapped. And then Angie was abducted just about a month and a half later. So the authorities feared that there was a serial killer on the loose in West Central Missouri, even though they had little hope that either Angie or Cheryl are still alive. There had been unconfirmed sightings of Angie in several states.
Wow.
Which I tried to look into more, like the unconfirmed sightings, but I couldn't really find anything. You know what I mean? They just kind of said like...
You think it's just word of mouth then?
Yeah, it could have been just like word of mouth or people thinking. Because I'm sure at this point there's missing signs all over the place. And people are calling in anybody that could look like her.
Yeah.
So while I was doing my research and it said that the cases between Angie's, Trudy's, and Cheryl's were... connected, at least they thought they were. But when I was looking at it, I thought, okay, well, maybe Trudy and Cheryl's are connected because they were both convenience store workers. And, you know, Angie wasn't. She worked at a bank and she was taken from a payphone. Mm-hmm. So, like, I don't know. I guess the proximity is, like, basically the only thing that they really went off of.
Maybe the women also looked alike. That might be a possibility.
Well, I have pictures of them at the bottom of this document that we're on, and they don't really look alike at all.
Oh, damn. Well, that's out of the picture.
You're right. They look like three totally different people. And because I was just like, I don't know. Like, maybe just those two could be connected because they're convenience store workers. But maybe also it's just the proximity because, I mean, they're in a 100-mile radius of all of them.
Yeah, it might be that.
I don't know. But there are lots of potential suspects, and we're going to get into some of the theories. The police, as we know, first thought of Rob, Angie's fiance, as a suspect, but they quickly ruled that out. According to Rob, Angie described the man lurking outside the payphones to be a filthy Caucasian man with glasses, a beard, and a mustache. He was wearing overalls, and he drove an older late 60s to early 70s model two-toned green Ford pickup with the mural of a fish jumping out of water on the back window. So that's all that they have to go off of.
Yeah.
There have been many theories on how the abduction and possible murder of Angela Hammond happened, and I'm going to list a couple. So theory number one, Angie fell victim to a serial killer. There were two active serial killers in the state of Missouri at the time, Kenneth McDuff and Tommy Sells. Their victims were young women, and some theorize that they could have been responsible. However, there is no direct evidence leading to McDuff or Sells, and both the McDuff and Sells have been executed since this happened. So if they did have any part of it, it's unlikely that we'd ever know for sure that it was them, because they're not here anymore.
That is crazy, though, that Missouri has two serial killers at the same time, around that time.
Yeah, around 1991.
I was like, what?
It is wild. And the fact that they, like, had their names and everything.
Yeah, like, they were established. Like, they were caught for being serial killers.
Yep, and they probably had a list of people that they had killed and may or may not have told somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? When they're in jail, sometimes they confess and sometimes they don't.
They like to brag to their other inmate friends.
Their accomplishments.
Yeah.
Okay, so theory number two. Random attack, a crime of opportunity. You know, she's someone at a payphone and someone passing by and saw her, or perhaps had seen her earlier in the day and began following her. However, it is a risky, like, operation to abduct someone when they're on the phone and have plenty of time to describe the situation to whom they're talking to, which in this case is Rob Schaefer. You know, she's on a payphone, she's talking to somebody, she could easily, you know, say something like she did. Because, I mean, he circled the block a couple of times, he was messing around with the phone, he had the flashlight out. If I was on the phone with somebody, I'd be like, who is this creep and what are they doing? And I would probably explain to somebody too.
Dang. So it's probably not a random attack then.
No, I don't believe so. You're gonna hear my favorite theory and you'll see why in a minute. It's not this next theory, but it's a good one that I can't wait to talk about.
Okay.
So theory number three, which relates to the previous accounts of Trudy Darby and Cheryl Kenny. At a later date, Trudy's case had been solved with the convictions of half-brothers Jesse Rush and Marvin Channey. However, Cheryl and Angie's cases still remain unsolved. Investigators suspect that Jesse and Marvin were involved in them. However, they have not been charged. Still, they're kind of just sticking. I feel like they're sticking with something that is a safe option.
Yeah.
Because I feel like they're still very different cases. I mean, Trudy's body was found. Cheryl and Angie, whether they're alive or not, their bodies have not been found.
Wow. I figured that their bodies had been found. I was like, you know, compared DNA.
Nope, no bodies have been found for Cheryl or Angie.
That's crazy then, yeah.
Which is the thing, like, when you think of serial killers or people that kill anyways, they usually have a pattern. And they left Trudy's body so open on a riverbank,
mm-hmm.
You would think, okay, well, if they did that to anybody else, it would probably be found by now.
Right.
But that's just me thinking.
That's what makes sense.
One rumor even suggested that Angie was murdered and thrown into a well at an old artesian park in Clinton, Missouri, close to the site of a very old water ride. But it is unknown if that has ever been explored. So people are just making up stories, I feel like, at this point.
That's what it sounds like.
Just trying to think of every possible...
Check out the...
Yeah, every possible thing. They're like, oh, maybe this happened. So the theory that I find the most interesting and completely separates Angie from the connection between Trudy and Cheryl's case is the one that was brought to light on the 30th anniversary of Angie's disappearance just last April, like April 2001.
OMG.
Yeah, so 30 years was, you know, not this last April, but the April before that, last year.
Yeah, 30 years.
Isn't that crazy? No leads, no nothing in 30 years. I could not imagine.
Mm-mm.
So this theory was announced by the Clinton Police Department. They had announced that this theory was being investigated and said it was confidential from an informant that helped a narcotics operation. So this informant from the narcotics received a cut and paste letter, which read, and mind you, in this note from the confidential informant, there are some names that are redacted for safety, so I don't even know what they say. So I'm going to read it as that. So it starts out and it says...
Make up a name.
What?
I was like, make up a name.
Make up a name. Yeah, sure. Okay. So, hello, no, redacted. We know who you are, no, redacted. People like you deserve what you get. We know where your foxy daughter is at. She will see us soon. Tell, wife's name. She has our deepest sympathy in her further losses. Goodbye. And that was it. So in the original...
That's weird.
Yeah. The letter correctly identified the informant's court-issued number along with his wife's first name. And the letter was postmarked for April 4th, 1991, the day that Angie was abducted.
I hope that's weird. Yeah.
Yes. And the craziest part.
That's weird.
Yeah. The even crazier part is that the daughter of the informant, her name was also Angela.
This is so weird.
Yeah. So, and they were living in Clinton at the same time as well. So investigators theorized that those involved in the narcotics operation targeted the informant's daughter, but mistakenly abducted Angela Hammond. So it was a case of mistaken identity is what they're going with. So investigators have noted that. They have noted that while the theory seems credible, they still don't have enough information to, you know, rule it out. But they've also recently received an anonymous call from someone that may have had information about Angela's abduction. The caller specifically mentioned details involving the letter, and they're hoping that the caller will call back. So that's just wild to me, because there were even parts in the information that I read that said that the informant's daughter, Angela, resembled the Angela in this case. So it is very possible that they thought that they were getting the informant's daughter the whole time and grabbed the wrong girl.
Yeah, and then what did they do after they just got her? They were like, oops.
Fuck. we fucked up.
Get rid of her.
Yeah.
That would be crazy.
Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy to think that, like, this could have been, you know, the informant was in a narcotics operation. It was all undercover, and they were trying to get someone who was obviously bad. And then it just went south even more.
Mm-hmm.
So Rob said that he often thinks of that night. And he said, the beginning is the hardest because you know you were close enough to get him, but you just don't get the job done. And you still wake up at night wondering if anybody's looking. You're just wondering all the time. That's so sad.
Yeah.
So this brings us to present day. Angie's been missing for 31 years. And there are still no confirmed answers as to where Angela Hammond is, or sadly enough, where her body is. Because to think, if she's been missing for 31 years, she's more than likely dead. And I hate to say that, but she probably is.
Yeah. This is why cold cases get to me. Because, like, we don't know anything, basically.
No. I mean, pretty much, it's just that one night, and it's like she vanished.
Yeah, they couldn't find the car. Man, they don't have her body.
Nope, nothing to go with. And I couldn't imagine being her fiance and just not knowing and being so close and having gone 31 years. Like, how do you go on?
Mm-hmm.
But back to descriptions about her, just so that we can get this fresh into anybody's mind. Angela Hammond is described as a Caucasian female, 4'11 inches tall, weighing around 120 pounds at the time of her disappearance. She was also 4 months pregnant, which is something I didn't really mention in this case because it wasn't exactly relevant, but still equally as sad.
Yeah, that is so sad.
Yeah, so like they didn't really mention all that in the research that she was pregnant until it came out about like people looking for her, because I didn't read any of that in the research until they put out like this, you know, missing persons thing. So
yeah. I wonder if they knew.
I mean, I'm assuming that Rob would have known.
That must have been so devastating if he didn't know.
But exactly, to lose his, you know, fiance and his unborn child, and they just completely disappear.
Like your whole family is just taken from you.
Exactly. Your whole world is probably just thrown for a loop and shattered.
Mm-hmm. Aww.
She had brown curly hair and brown eyes with incredibly perfect teeth and a small scar above her lip. She also wore contacts. If you have any information about Angela Hammond's disappearance, please call the Clinton Police Department at 660-885-5561. And that's the end of our story this week.
Wow. Oh, that's sad. Cold cases are just, you just hear about it and that's it, because there's nothing else.
Yeah, there's no conclusion. There's no nothing. It's not cut and dry. It's just...
Mm-hmm. I understand what you said in the beginning.
Wild. And it just makes you think about the family.
Yeah, that too. I was going to say, it makes me think about what you said in the beginning about how you wish you could solve it. It's like...
Yeah, I wish I could solve it.
What do we need
to
do?
I wish I could put all the pieces together. Yeah, like, what do we need to do? How can we do this to give this family closure?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know they don't have it.
Yeah.
It's upsetting. And there's so many more cold cases out here that you would not believe.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to try to cover a couple more cold cases here and there, because I think that they're important, and the more that they get out there, the more that, you know, people who know this information maybe have seen these missing people and can report these things. You never know.
Yeah, that's true. Just bring awareness to it. Keep it fresh in your mind.
Yeah. So if you scroll down and you see the pictures, the first couple pictures are of Angela herself, and she was pretty.
Oh, I love her hair.
Right? It's so typical late 80s, early 90s hair.
It's like, yeah, with the bangs and the curly hair and the volume.
And the poof. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then that other picture is the police sketch of what they believe the guy that... abducted Angie looked like. And then this is a similar truck, because, I mean, they never found the truck.
That green truck.
Mm-hmm. And then the next picture is, like, the picture of the jumping fish mural mm-hmm. on the back.
That's what it looks like.
Whether that was the exact truck or not, because I don't really know what kind of technology they had back in the day, like, whether Rob was able to snap a picture of it or what, or if this is just a mock-up of it. Mm-hmm. But either way, that's what it kind of looked like.
So this letter right here... This is the letter?
This is the letter that the informant got on April 4th of 1991, and it was written from, you know, cutouts from a magazine, so nobody could, you know, decipher the writing.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be so creepy to get?
It would. I remember seeing those in movies all the time, and just, ooh.
Yeah, and I think it's happening in real life. It's creepy. Hmm. And then we've got an age progression picture of what they believe that Angie would look like now.
Oh, okay.
And then Rob Schaefer, her boyfriend. This is like the only picture I could find, and it looks like it's from a clip of a video. And oddly enough, I also found like this same picture, and it had the word like yummy on it.
What?
Yeah, like people were, I guess, finding her fiance attractive, and it was like on Google Images, and it was like saying yummy, and I was like, this is a serious matter.
This is inappropriate right now.
Yeah, like, what are we doing?
Wow.
And then the picture below it is a picture of the state of Missouri and where Clinton, Max Creek, and Nevada were, which Clinton is where Angie's case took place, and then Trudy's was in Max Creek, and Nevada was where Cheryl's was.
Yeah, they really are so close together. You can see they're pretty close together. If you see the map.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then there is a endangered missing poster for Cheryl, and you can tell she does not look nothing like...
Angie.
Yeah, totally different. White, like blonde hair, bleached tips, green eyes, very different. And then below that one is a picture of Trudy, again, very different. And then we have a picture, brown hair. You can tell she's a little bit older too.
Yeah, she has brown hair, brown eyes.
And then we got a picture of Kenneth McDuff, which is the serial killer that was on the loose around the same time that Angie was taken.
Ew.
Yeah, it gets grosser. Below is Marvin Chaney, who was sentenced to prison for the abduction and murder of Trudy Darby, and his half-brother, Jesse Rush. They look crazy.
So, did they really do it?
That's what they were convicted with. It'd be interesting to do a whole episode on her case.
So, who would have done the other girl? Like, it wasn't a serial killer, unless they did the other girl, too.
Yeah. I don't think that Marvin and Jesse had anything to do with Cheryl. Maybe Cheryl's, but I don't think they had anything to do with Angie's, because... One,
it just ended up being a coincidence.
Yeah, and also I feel like if they were convicted of this, they would probably find a green truck in their possession at some point, and that would have been a connection there, but there was no green truck. And also Angie seemed to be taken by one person, not two. So just, I feel like a lot of it just doesn't add up as much as they wanted it to.
Yeah, that's just all separate.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't connect it.
No. I think they tried to so hard and it just didn't work. All right. Well, all those pictures that we just talked about are going to be linked in our Instagram and on our blog post. And we thank you guys for listening to this week's episode. Also, check out the description from this episode to links to our link tree and all our social media. And also a Google form. And if you would like to request a case, you can do so there. We appreciate you guys listening, and we will see you guys next week for another episode.
Oh, yeah. Also, leave us a review. We noticed that we got some reviews on Apple Podcast. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Yes. It was Agent Doofenshmirtz from, you know, Phineas and Ferb. and it was Damien.
Shout out to those people.
Yay. Thank you guys.
I laughed out loud.
Yeah, we love it. We love interacting with y'all because we want to feel like we're really reaching y'all with these cases. You know?
So if you guys post a review on either Spotify or Apple or give us a comment on our blog, we will shout you guys out every once in a while.
Yeah.
We'd like to keep it up and do it like a weekly thing, but that's up to you guys. We absolutely love hearing your feedback.
Yep.
And we've been picking cases that we, you know, find and we don't think a lot of people talk about. And they're important to talk about and they bring out new information that needs to be, you know, brought into existence. So with that being said, thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it. And we will be back next week with another episode told by yours truly, Rocio.
Yes, I will see y'all next week. Bye.
Bye.